Mike, you are recording.
It's 7:02. We'll call this meeting to order. It's a regular meeting and public hearing of the North Bend Planning Commission, Thursday, April 25th, 2019. This is Commissioner Heller speaking. And we have
Commissioner McBride.
Okay.
Commissioner Greenberg.
Commissioner Taub.
Commissioner McFarland.
Commissioner Bovers.
Hey, Commissioner Miller is not here yet, but may be later. And the staff present.
Jeannie Burrell.
Lynn Hyde.
Okay. All right, next is to approve tonight's agenda.
I'll move to approve, but I have a question as well.
Okay.
Second.
Second. All right, question.
Are we approving the March 14th or the
Well, that's the minutes.
April? The minute. Oh, I'm sorry, the agenda. Well, that would, it's on the agenda, it states that we're approving the March 14th minutes.
Ooh.
Good. And that's why I'm questioning it now.
Yeah, April 11th is what we're going for, right?
Yes, so the ones attached in there.
You can already approve.
My motion would be to approve as amended.
Second.
All those in favor of approving tonight's agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. None opposed? Okay, so then we move on to approving the minutes from the last meeting, April 11th. Do I have a motion?
I'll move to approve the April 11th minutes.
Okay.
I'll second.
Second by Commissioner Bovers. I had a comment. I just saw that at the top it says joint meeting. It might be a carryover from rec group catch. Any other comments or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the April 11th minutes, say aye.
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 And opposed?
I'll oppose, but I'm going to abstain since I was not.
Fair enough.
I should probably abstain.
Okay. Two abstentions, possibly, if that's a word.
Yeah.
Commissioner Greenberg and Commissioner McFarland weren't here. All right, so public comment on non-agenda items. Remember, the public wishes to
comment.
All eyes turn over to me. Hi, Michael Thomas, 1231 LaForest Drive, DC.
Okay.
I'm also commenting in my personal capacity and as a board trustee of Solal. I wanted to follow up on maybe some of the past planning commission meeting. There's a lot of course, as always, I like to talk a lot about water. And I guess since I carry the water for the water. Previous planning commission, there was a lot of discussion around, you know, water restrictions and water conservation ordinances, which I view are quite controversial. I think one of the commissioners kind of has it right, is we're taking away people's right to water to cram in more HDR, as the way I think many of the public perceive it. And I think that's the right perception. To my knowledge, North Bend has really never had sort of summer watering restrictions related to landscaping. Even in talking to one of the Solal employees, Solal has never had any summer watering restrictions. So this is uncharted territory for us. And I'm very concerned, as one who's quite knowledgeable about mitigation, that if we're banking on using summer watering restrictions as a way of avoiding building a second mitigation system like the toll, and the original plan even envisions that even with Solal's water that you would eventually need the toll for some other source, that we may be in very serious trouble with overdevelopment. There's also no data to substantiate how much water one might save through these water conservation measures. What if people are already conserving water? For example, even though I hand water, I have all kinds of sprinklers, I have timers. I have sprinklers I can precisely aim. So there's a real concern here about using water conservation as a way to avoid the capital expenditure of more mitigation. And in fact, in the Q&A that the city put out, citizens should be very concerned about that that city water users would pay through rates to fund the cost of the toll or some other systems. Why are ratepayers paying for capital costs? This should have been done through GSEs, through general facilities charges, charge of development. So this is a very disturbing comment. When is the city going to start increasing capital charges to pay for its capital water infrastructure? This is a very bad statement. And very disturbing when I look at this in terms of planning and charging. I do want to also say a few things around some citizen comments that I've seen online. I think the time may be difficult many people hand water, but they also work. So restricting water to 10 at night, 10 in the morning may be unfair to those people. I think that that's a key consideration as you think of, as you go through this ordinance. It may be unreasonable to ask people to install drip watering systems. Those are quite expensive. You know, if you're saying you're going to exempt people from water restrictions if only they have drip watering systems, well, that's not reasonable. And it's taking away something that people don't have to pay for now. People have a view to be harmed by this ordinance. What, I have damages. I mean, this costs me money. It costs other people in the city money to basically take away the right to water in the summer to enable more development. Also, I think one of the converse questions I think that's very important in the city, several city officials have made comments about, well, if we just do this water conservation, maybe we can push the need for an additional mitigation system out 20 or 30 years. Well, you know, what if you don't do this? Do you need it right away?
Just about 30 seconds.
Are you already past the point of needing the second mitigation system? And I think that's a critical question. So it's a key concern. And I personally remain opposed to this. I haven't seen any new revisions. Certainly I'm in favor of saving water if we can, but I just don't see that this is very fair or supportable. So, and thank you for your time.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Since I missed the last meeting, I don't recall what was in the packet, because I frankly didn't go over it very closely. Was this ordinance that he's referring to brought up to the Planning Commission at the last meeting?
No. It wasn't. No, it
That's
was not.
I don't recall it being. I've seen articles about the city
briefed,
council.
Right? You were just briefed on what was going through council?
A little bit, but it was about the wastewater treatment plant, really use of water.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it might go that way when I looked at the agenda, but I don't recall.
Yeah, and there's a hearing scheduled at City Council. I think the hearing was extended, and it's May 2nd.
7th is the next council meeting.
So the Planning Commission has no role in this ordinance, is that
right?
Correct. Okay, I just wanted to see what our role was.
Right.
Okay. Okay. That was all I needed to find out. Thanks.
Okay. All right. So now, public hearing. Critical areas ordinance maps. So do you want to just open it up and then, or do you want to give an intro, Jamie? Or?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I provided in your packets the critical area maps. This is for the critical area ordinance amendments that you guys have approved and will be going to council their second meeting in May. So the draft has been emailed out to them and we've been working through it. But we finally got the map series revised. So I can quickly go through the maps and just the high level changes were city limits, if those there were some places where they weren't captured correctly, we might have changed some colors. Again, just relabeling dates, if there was new data or any other minor things. The other piece of it is these series of maps are repeated in the comprehensive plan too. So they're showing up in two locations, which is they're redundant. That's the way it is right now. When we open the comp plan back up, we might revise that. But for now, we didn't change anything in the comp plan except the maps. We didn't change any of the language. It was all looked at with the critical area amendments, and it was vague enough that we changed the code, and then we just wanted to revise the maps so that they're both consistent. So it's a code amendment and a comp plan amendment. The wetland map, the first one you see, the change there was that there were some wetlands identified as potential, and it was based on old King County data, really just, I think, LIDAR data showing, looking at ground contours. Those were removed, and Department of Ecology supported that. They said, don't have it on there if it's not a known thing. And then the only other things that were added were delineated wetlands that we have put into our GIS since we last revised the map. Figure 2, critical aquifer recharge area. The wellhead protection study area, 3,000 foot radius. You'll see three of those in hatched red crossings. that is for the Centennial Well and North Bend Wells 1 and 2, I believe they're called. And the reason for this was the city started a study but did not finish a study yet to look at, you know, you can map something as a perfect circle, but in all reality, groundwater picks a different path, and it might be more of a teardrop shape is what we're thinking. To err on the side of caution, we just increased it from 1,000 to 3,000. That was based on Department of Ecology standards and our Department of Health standards. And so we just put that in here for now. If we get a study that informs us differently, we'll amend the map at that time.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Is this a good time?
Sure.
Point of order. Oh. I think you want to wait until after the hearing.
Okay. Did you open the hearing officially?
No.
Well, yeah, let's, I thought we'd do introduction.
Okay.
And then we'll
okay.
open up the public hearing.
Yeah.
I'll write my comment. Question.
Yeah. Okay. There's just a few more things. Yep. Figure three, the streams and fish and wildlife habitat. This one, you guys spent quite a bit of time on the language again, and so this is just updating those habitats, areas, and their buffers. So we combine the streams with the fish and wildlife together into one chapter. It was previously separated, but they had the same buffers. Just so you guys know, the city council so far, like I said, they have... they've been emailed the council the proposal of your buffer recommendations, and you guys went with the King County urban buffer standards, and we discussed it at the last committee meeting, and they were a little unsure about the increase, more in the for the 65 feet for the type NS, the non-fish bearing streams. They went from 25 to 65. Again, we exempted out, you know, those developed areas like Silver Creek, but otherwise, there were some slight increases in buffers. So this is just reflecting that, and again, just revising anything that we saw needed. There were no changes to Figure 4 of substance. I mean, if there was a minor error in a city limit or something, that was changed, but no changes in Figure 4, 5. Sixth, with the flood maps, there looks like, you know, they added the Pulte development in. There might have been some new site-specific, but our overall flood map has not changed. And then you get into the comp plan map series, which is a repeat. It's just renumbered differently, but a repeat of what you just saw. There's a few more figures in the comp plan, seismic hazard and liquefaction. Again, those weren't changed. Just the changes I pointed out to you are the major ones. So.
Let's open up the public hearing. See what time it is. It's 7:15? Take any comments from the public?
Yep, I have comments.
Okay.
Sure. Michael Thomas, 1231, La Forest Drive, SE. These are personal comments on the Cook Areas Map Sleepy hearing, as well as the ordinance changes and semi unit capacity that is a board trustee's. The carriers, in particular, carrier type 1 for Centennial or NV3. Appear to be based on wetland protection areas, although I'm not aware that the city has actually updated its source protection area for NV3 that are in fact the actual basis for this. This was actually done during source protection analysis during water system planning, so it's not clear that the proper analysis had even been done. And actually, I would object to the map on that basis, as the update hasn't really been formally completed. A couple things, the fixed radius versus analytic or model method of computing the wetland protection area. And the time travel is not the recommended or best science. If you actually read the water system planning guidelines by DOH, well of Centennial size actually calls for analytic or model, not a fixed radius method. The city has done considerable work in conjunction with its consultants to understand the aquifer properties in the area, so there's extensive knowledge. And in fact, it did do a study in 2015, or at least partially. I would object to the fixed radius method being used, as it doesn't represent the most best available science, nor is it recommended, for a well the size of the capacity of NP3. I kind of object to your objective representation that you haven't performed an environmental study or analysis, clearly the 2015 work, the past definition of wetland protection area and time travel zones are environmental analysis. In fact, the city in the past did not use the full capacity of NB3 in its disclosure in the source protection analysis for NB3. The expansion of NB3 capacity may require mitigation against microbial and other contamination, particularly the requirement to disinfect NB3. And this may also apply to NB2 and 1. NB2 and 1 may similarly require microbial contamination and treatment disinfection given proximity to rivers and streams. Your radius and radii include a lot more radius streams and rivers, including the Middle Fork, South Fork, and these type NS and other streams that are also identified in figure 3. So it's very interesting to contrast those. Also, you need to consider that you have surface water conveyances and you have stormwater storage or somewhere near New City Hall and or fire station. That should the removal of that stormwater be needed as mitigation, or do you need to contaminate NP3 or and others? Public Works itself is a source of contamination, with its being used as a yard waste collection point and apparent use for winter grade gravel or salt for de-icing and storage of junk debris or other materials used by Public Works. As I mentioned earlier, I'm going to attach figures 2 and 3 and 2.4, and this will be my written comment for the record. Figures 2 and 3 indicate substantial rivers and streams and other water conveyances within the fixed radii indicated. The maps also don't show, the red shaded areas don't show whether that's paratype 1 or 2. And I object to the map in figure 2, and also object to the map in figure 2.4 as well for the same reasons. Thank you. And who do these go to? Who's go to the chair?
Jane, do you want to give me for the record?
And thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. All right, so 7:19, we'll close the public hearing. We'll move into our Planning Commission deliberation and possible recommendation. All right, let's start with the question that you asked.
Yeah, just a question also on figure 2. Mm-hmm. So I think, if I heard you right, the 3,000-foot radius was an increase?
Yes.
Over what we had before, which was 1,000 feet?
Mm-hmm.
What is the impact of increasing from 3,000 to 1,000? So, for example, people within the additional 2,000-foot radius, are there any additional restrictions that somebody within those increased radii would need to just curious.
Yeah.
And not opposed to
yeah.
it,
and I'm not the expert on this. I know Mr. Thomas has had detailed questions to Don DeBerg, our engineer, and we have the wellhead protection study that was, partially developed and needs to be finished. But from my understanding, it's just identifying those areas need to be protected and need to be a part of our study area. The difference between, we do in the code differentiate a difference between the CARA 1 and CARA 2, which you can see the colors on the maps. It wasn't a requirement by Department of Health that we increase them. We did that because we don't have the science finished up and the study finished up. So it was just out of an abundance of caution at this point.
Does it change, and sorry, I don't know the answer to this, but does it change the sort of stormwater infiltration they can do during review, or is that just within the CARAs?
I don't know. Okay. Yeah, I don't know the answer.
A change in that radius might change the impervious surface something
right.
to allow to put
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So it was just more
the
curiosity
detail of the study.
Of,
yeah.
What's the impact of the property owner
right.
who now all of a sudden may have requirements they have to meet
right.
that they didn't have to meet yesterday.
Yeah, and generally our entire city is, under the sole source aquifer. We, follow the King County Surface Water Design Manual. So we treat and infiltrate on site, and you know, we require paving for any vehicular use areas, for example, and a lot of cities don't do that, and that is to protect groundwater. So there's a lot of measures that we take. You know, there are existing things that are out there that are, you know, potentially, you know, harmful to the aquifer, but anything new has to meet current code and standards. So.
Okay. Is category one more stringent? Or
yeah, and again, in the code, it just, it lists, like, really severe things, like, you know, animal, you know, having livestock, and what else does it call out? Just hazardous just materials.
More toxic uses, yeah. That could potentially have the potential to give off a more toxic biocharge are not allowed in the CAR one, but mm-hmm. if you look through them, it's the sort of things that we actually don't even allow in our city for the most part.
Hazardous underground tanks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So follow up a little bit, kind of just for clarity on the question I think Scott was asking related to the wellhead protection. So basically, we're tripling it, which by the map essentially takes in the entire city. And we're saying we've got preliminary science pointing us that direction. We've got a study partially completed, which is indicating we might want more protection than we were showing.
Or that it's in a different shape.
Or that it's in, right. I definitely get that implication.
Might be.
That might drive beyond
right.
just the CARA.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I mean, I can email you guys the plan and the information we have to date so you have it and you could read it. I just think because it's not finalized, therefore the regulations that might apply in the future or the restrictions are not fully developed either, or vetted either, so.
Total speculation here in this part, but I believe that one of the impacts is there are different infiltration rates mm-hmm. associated with the wellhead protection mm-hmm. area versus not.
Mm-hmm. Much slower
rate. That would be a major factor for mm-hmm. someone developing, whether it be a commercial building or a private residence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, fortunately, our groundwater is 2 feet below the surface right here, so it's pretty hard to infiltrate anyway.
Well aware of that. Most of the downtown, but different areas of the city, of course, it's quite different. And then a follow up to that, this study, is there an anticipated time at which it's going to be completed?
Yeah, I've asked Don DeBerg that. He's the project manager for it. He didn't say, but I don't think it's a huge effort or a long time. It's a matter of they were going to scope it out and then see how much it was going to be to finish it and work it into the schedule. So don't have a timeline yet, but I can check again with him.
Is it possible to delay adoption of this of the CARA maps until that's there?
We didn't want to hold everything back. So the default would be leave it as is, and that's 1,000. So we just decided to do this, to be take that extra layer, level of protection.
So
I don't think we want to delay.
What you're saying is that the current map does not show anything beyond a 1,000-foot radius, so it's not getting at what the science might lead us to. And is the presumption then that this 3,000-foot radius may in fact exceed what the actual results of the study
in certain areas. Mm-hmm.
So,
and we have, Commerce has commented, you know, thanks for your last comprehensive plan update. We're still awaiting your critical areas. We're a little behind on that. So we'd like to get the critical area amendments adopted. The maps just go along with it. We didn't change anything in the critical area regulations code in that chapter, really. We left it the same. But as soon as we get better information and we're more informed, we'll make those changes, and it'll be a quick amendment. Or I mean, it doesn't have to delay. You know, it doesn't have to be years from now if we have that information. So.
Gary, Jamie, Mr. Thomas brought up a number of different points that I know we had a couple of different technical experts come in and explain the science and explain the rationale behind some of the recommendations. Are you able to offer any comments?
That was a part of the analysis. Like I said, there wasn't a consultant or a department, an agency telling us to do this. Like Mr. Thomas said, there's the best available science information out there. He probably knows more about it than I do as far as the studies you should do. In lieu of that, we were told, it had been mentioned to us, increase by 3,000 feet is more of the standard unless you have a study that shows you a different shape and you've done that work. So that's why we decided to revise the map for now until we have better information. So, and like I said, I can email you guys the study and the information we have, and then find out what the timeline is for getting that finished up.
So then, just following up on Scott's question, if we didn't adopt tonight, and
right,
just deferred until
right,
all of the studies were done and we had all of the data, and
yeah,
didn't have to go back and then make amendments based on new information, what impact does that have to any of our decision making?
I guess the unknown is, are we going to go through with the study and finish it? So the consultant was scoping it out, and that's what I don't know. Since I'm not the project manager, you know, is the city going to authorize us to go in and finish that work and do the modeling? So we might be waiting a long time. We might be waiting a few months. That's the unknown. The default is what's on the books now, like I said. So, but I think that the city council would like to see the critical area amendments for the code adopted. So they'll probably go through, move it forward anyways, you know, irregardless of what we do with this map. But like I said, if we don't do anything, what we have on the books is 1,000 feet. So, because we're out of compliance right now with our comprehensive plan update, because you're supposed to revise every 8 years, and we're beyond that for the comprehensive plan. So, and most of the amendments, as you guys know, were not, we changed the wetland rating system, we revised a few stream buffers. Most of the rest of it was not substantial in nature. But getting this new information is good. We always want to have that. It's just a matter of when is it coming. So didn't want to delay the other process.
If I may, I can make a point that go to the order, so you see.
Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe a little later.
Clarification on figure 6.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that some developments had been added.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that just meant pictorially, but I believe as some of those developments came in, did that also alter the flood mapping?
Mm-hmm. It can if they get a letter of map amendment or a letter of map revision.
I think that applied to the Pulte project.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, there's a table in the lower left that has the letter of map, the two cases.
I'm aware that the Ranger Cottages
mm-hmm.
project did several of those. So was that worth is that those updates on you?
Good question.
They should be. It says base flood elevations determined. I can double check with Mark on that,
it's all blue, which seems to indicate to me that it has been updated, but
right,
just not positive.
Okay.
Even if not, simply a map, we know what the science is.
Right.
Thank you.
On figure two, do the, maybe not over these wells, the blue dots indicating the locations of physical things, indicating you have those in the legend, indicating which is which.
Yeah, we could add that. That would be hard to do.
The wellhead itself.
Mm-hmm, or the name of it, yeah.
The name of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Just a question on the study. Is it going to come down to cost as far as doing it or not?
From what I understand, it's not a huge, massive effort. So therefore, I wouldn't think it's a huge, massive cost. It's just a matter of timing and prioritizing. So, Don would know better. But the last time I asked him a few weeks ago, it was, you asked the consultant for a scope to finish it up and was waiting to hear back. So we're definitely, it's on our radar, to get that finished.
Do the commissioners have a lot of comments on the figures? Generally, should we go through one by one? Or?
I don't have any comments.
Yeah. Did you have it? I don't really have much either. I did want to just go to figure six. I think that's where Rob was. And just the dark green that says flood depth to 3 feet, meaning can get really flooded.
Right, that's one of the more severe areas. And if you drive, down those streets right over there, you see the homes are raised up quite a bit higher. Again, it's based on FEMA's modeling, so it's always debatable from the people that have lived there for a long time. But, for whatever reason, that area is showing more flooding potential. So the lowest floor of those homes have to be elevated to that
and
level.
And down in the urban growth area, that's River Bend, that's
correct.
Dark green.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of sits down.
Yeah, a basin.
It's a basin.
Yeah. Okay. All right, were there any other concerns on figure two? Or I think it probably makes sense to move forward. I mean, leaving the
three thousand comments. There. Yeah.
No, I don't have many.
My comments only about summary. So, Mr. Chair, I think overall we've spent a lot of time with this overall, I'll just describe as our environmental comp plan pieces, and I think at each stage of the way we've taken the more cautious approach, whether it be increasing stream buffers or even the figure two here, wellhead. Seems an abundance of caution, and while it might be, it would be great to have the actual study completed that might better define those areas, I think it would be, let me say it this way, while I have some concerns with what the impacts to an individual property owner might be, continuing our general deference to being cautious when it comes to our environment, I think this is a better step to move this forward than to wait. We can let that science catch up with us, which may indeed change the shape of the circle. This is, again, roughly three times more cautious than we currently have.
Yeah, and I would just add to a point that the maps, I think as it says, it's, compiled at this time, subject to change, and, we're doing are putting the best information we have at the time, but studies have to be performed, and better information always
well,
can come.
Well, we're always at that stage.
Right.
That's why we end up here looking at these documents, you know, at different points, and as you mm-hmm. pointed out, every 6 to 8 years, because we get better information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we get a delineation report in next week for a wetland, the map's going to change next week, you know, and it should be evolving and changing. It shouldn't be stagnant.
Yeah, just a comment on the figure three. I think it's something that council changed just with type F stream buffers, and it just kind of making a choke point in the buffer. Mm-hmm. It, like in developed areas, it shows on the map where it's kind of a wide buffer, and then it's down to just a kind of a...
Is there an example you're looking at?
Yeah, coming out of Forester Woods... Mm-hmm. I kind of understand there, I guess, a little bit more so than some of these properties that aren't developed going downstream, where the 90 is there, north of that. So I think that's the change they made.
So this is just showing actual buffer. So through the Nintendo site and the outlet mall, they're vested to that 25-foot, the old buffer, same as Forester Woods. So... And same as through Safeway Complex. So this is just trying to show in reality, this is what those buffers look like. If it were a completely new development blowing through like you see on you know, the vacant property George Wersch's, it's showing those wider buffers. So it's trying to be a little bit more representative of what's on the ground.
All right. Maybe I could have seen, with the...
Yeah,
with the
not a change.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Is it to Trillin Park? Is not having any buffers.
Hmm. Yeah, Tenant Trailhead
has the most buffers.
Right, it's all pretty and protected.
It's this parcel though, right? It's that parcel and that parcel.
Sorry, I'm just asking. Tenant Trailhead Park or New Park, it shows
this
as not having buffers.
Yeah, we could have that little bubble there.
I mean, it's a small detail. But
are you suggesting an edit?
Yes, I suppose I would be. If you all want to edit.
If you are, then please tune us in on exactly where you are.
I've already got your other ones.
So, where Commissioner Heller was just talking about, if you go south and to the west, just north of Rock Creek Ridge Apartments.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys can see right there. There's...
Yeah.
That is currently going through our new park, so actually it will have
buffers.
Okay. So it's like two parcels.
Mm-hmm.
One really big one.
Yep. Yeah. Correct.
And then a corner of the other.
Yeah.
So you're talking about essentially where that stream corridor comes into the city limits.
Correct.
To the point of which it joins up with the other parcels already showing the water.
There's a small portion of that. Well, there's a portion of that that's in the Rock Creek Ridge, but I'm not sure why. I'd be curious to our GIS analysis why that doesn't show up as well, because it does have the buffer, as you can tell it.
Rock Creek Ridge has a buffer?
This right here is...
I would expect Rock Creek would be the minimal.
Yeah, I think it is.
That's considering the time period
it is.
That's the
25.
Yeah, I thought this one though did. Anyways, I would just want to clarify with the person that's doing the modeling.
Okay.
Thanks for the clarification. All right. Well, let's see. So this would be a motion to approve the critical areas ordinance maps / comprehensive plan critical area map amendments with a few edits
mm-hmm.
discussed tonight.
Mm-hmm. So moved. Second.
Second by Commissioner Greenberg. Any other comments or changes? Okay, seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Opposed. Commissioner Ryan?
I'm stating my opposition into it because we're just doing what we do always, and that is we're passing the buck down. I heard a comment made that city council's going to pass this regardless of where anything comes out of this meeting. I think that's probably true, so I'm not going to lend my voice to a situation where they can just rubber stamp it. The other city, previous times, had a shameful way of doing things. Forester Woods were never supposed to be developed. Forester Woods was zoned originally as a 5-acre, 10-acre parcel of land to help protect the resources on Rattlesnake Ridge. Big Martha went ahead anyway, made the proposal to change that zoning to high density and incorporate it. And they did it against the best judgment of the citizens on the advisory committee back in the days when that was being discussed. We're tonight from a citizen who's well knowledgeable about matters that are involving these figures. We're not paying much attention to that. We're going to pass it and let the city council work their will on it. So I'm not willing to lend my voice to that, so I vote no opposition.
Thank you for your comments. Let's see. Moving on to next agenda item, Planning Commission deliberation and possible recommendations, amendments to North Bend Municipal Code 18.22 temporary use regulations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I missed that meeting, but I saw the comments that were made, the edits in there. So.
Sure, I'll give a little update. So you saw this code about, I think it was 3 meetings ago, and I'm sorry for the delay. I was on vacation and just the way the meetings worked out. But after the discussion, the main edits, and for those of you actually who weren't here at that last meeting, because we did have a few absent, the goal of this was to try and allow additional opportunities for property owners and business owners within the city limits to realize economic gain, whether on their property or if they're coming in and want to do some more unique startup types of businesses, to recognize, to have more opportunities. This is trying to formalize that, so the city has a way to condition those that will be coming in, and it also increases the allowable time that they will be coming in. And the reason being, we've heard there's a number of people with vacant property who are trying to develop it, but in the meantime, because it does take years to develop a piece of vacant property, they're hoping to see some return on their investment through some economic development. So these temporary uses would allow that. They also allow additional opportunities for citizens as far as additional, whether it's food trucks, which is a new section added, additional eating options or shopping options. So it's the goal is to provide more flexibility for property owners and more opportunities for citizens. That's the goal. This one is quite the opposite, actually, of your critical areas code, where that one's looking at best science. This one is a lot more squishy, I'll say, and up to the discretion of the Planning Commission, the City Council, and citizens. So this one, I think, is a little bit harder to point at best science. We've spent some time looking at what adjacent cities do. They do everything from not allowing temporary uses at all to not regulating them at all because they don't want to get into the market. So there's kind of both bookends, and what we were trying to do was find a medium, a happy middle ground that would work for North Bend. After our last meeting, what we did, so staff had recommended extending the period from 45 days to 120, or let's see, well, that's what we have here now. I think before we had it to 60, and then if you wanted to go to 120, you had to ask for an extension. Per your conversation at the last one, and really great feedback is, let's give them a little more certainty and just have a fixed time, as well as cut down on staff time processing an extension and the subjectivity that comes with an extension. So we set it at 120 days, but anything longer than that in one calendar year would have to go through a hearings examiner and a conditional use permit. Those 120 days, the way it's written now, do not have to be consecutive. It's just within a calendar year. Some other things that we added. since our last one is we made sure that it was clear that the use has to be a permitted use per 1810.030, your table of permitted uses, which you all spent a lot of time on. It has to be an allowed use already. You can't, for example, bring a commercial use into a residential zone through this permit. So it has to meet that table. Another one that we spent some time talking about was if temporary uses, and the one that I think we all envisioned that would actually happen is a food truck would be allowed along North Findway in our downtown zone. We talked about this a little bit more with our internal team, and the general consensus was it would make sense to not allow them in our more compact downtown core that is really has been improved for pedestrian, for walkability on North Bend Way, because they are going to be causing more congestion down there. There might be more people walking out in the streets. We already have limited parking along there, which we hear from our business owners. So not take up additional parking stalls with the temporary use, as well as it would just be quite a large truck parked down in our downtown plaza. The flip side to that we did hear as well, and I'm giving you this so you can just, you know, think about it, is the more uses you have down there, the more when you drive through, you might feel like, hey, something's going on downtown. I want to drive back down and check it out. So seeing the activity might be a reason that it would get someone to come back down as well, which we're trying to stimulate vibrancy in all parts of our town. But right now we're talking about our downtown. So staff did say if we were to prohibit it along public parking, it would be North Bend Way between, and we suggested Ballarat and Bendigo. So that's something for you to consider. We also added some clarification to the food truck section a lot of that was some wordsmithing as to, okay, what exactly were you looking for? And so there was a lot of clarification that happened there. A big one that's been added since you last saw it was the cargo containers. And I'm going to let Jamie speak to that when I'm done here. That's been a fun one that she's been tasked with. And another one that you're not seeing in here, but I wanted to touch base with you on, is we had talked about requiring, if a temporary use permit were to come in for multiple years in a row, to start requiring some rolled out improvements, some phased improvements. And after talking about that internally, we didn't feel that was the best way to do it, because the nature of a temporary use permit is it's temporary, and that at some point, if somebody has a vacant piece of land that they're doing this on, they are going to want to develop. The cost of their land is going to be such that they're going to want to develop it and realize the full market value of it, and that rolling out phased improvements would be doing it without the knowledge of what was going to happen on that site, and it might end up being torn out, as well as we put a lot of language in here to the director's discretion, and after talking to the director, he felt confident that we would be able to either not deny the application or condition it such if we felt they were trying to circumnavigate our development standards. So with that, I'm going to give it to Jamie to talk about the cargo containers a little bit.
Yeah, so that's the last page of your packet, and we added some provisions in there. What we had heard a number of times from council members, some council members, was we just want to prohibit them outright. Just let's not allow them. In reality, if you drive around, they're everywhere. So in some cases, I think, I don't know that we have support for that, to just prohibit them outright. We're going to take some pictures and we've been doing some research of what other cities have done. We're going to take that to council committee next meeting and see what they want to do and give you guys direction on a lot of cities have a whole chapter set up dealing with cargo containers. And basically, you know, the unaltered ones, just the shipping containers, and then they're ugly, right? You know, we don't want to see these everywhere. There's quite a few around town that are existing. And the idea being, if somebody has a need for it, you know, we can have a code chapter that requires screening and requires it to blend in, or those are some of the ideas. So that might be coming to you in the near term once we take it to council committee and just get their direction on, you know, are we do we really want to prohibit them completely, or will we allow them? Sometimes they can really be nice and integrated and not bad at all. For the purpose of the temporary uses, like I said, we see that there is a need sometimes for them. There's a moving need. There's a temporary storage need for a business. So we wanted to mostly follow the 120 days and a lot of the temporary use provisions, and give some allowance for us to say, hey, they have to be placed, you know, behind or out of direct sight. You know, we might require some other things, but basically up to 120 days, then they need to go. So the code chapter would be more for a permanent or more than 120-day placement, where we could really get to some design and some screening. So,
any questions?
Yeah.
Yes. All right. I guess I'm a no vote on everything tonight, it sounds like. I can't imagine why we'd even consider cargo containers as a temporary use in a neighborhood. That takes away business from the legitimate cargo facilities around town. Are struggling. They need to have their spaces filled up, not have these cargo storage areas scattered around the communities, which are, if I was negative at the beginning of a neighborhood, as you're going to start, is you begin to see the neighborhood starting to fall apart with those things stacked around, because it indicates to the community that there's no pride in our streets anymore. We can put anything there. So you can see other things starting to show up. Following behind these cargo containers, I strongly oppose this. It's not a welcoming thing in a neighborhood to have those kind of containers sticking out in a garage for 3-4 months and then extend it for another period. It just becomes to be a nuisance or a blight.
Right, and so now there's nothing on our books. So now we have no teeth to do anything. So this is actually adding some parameters.
Right, and I would strongly oppose the addition.
So what you could do through this is you could look at saying they're not allowed, and they're not allowed through temporary use permits, or you could look at limiting the days more. So right now, the way it's written is 120, you could suggest a shorter period of time as you discuss and think about it.
Could we prohibit them in residential zones or for residential uses?
I think you could. I think you'd want to allow them at least for a short period of time for moving. And that's where I think typically you see them in residential zones, although we do have examples of people that have used them for storage instead of building a shed.
Yeah. And there are smaller smaller containers that, if you're under that threshold of a building permit, again, we can't do anything about it if somebody puts one in their backyard. So unless they're in a floodplain or they have, you know, not met another code provision.
Commissioners want to go over this section while we're talking?
I was just going to suggest the same thing. As long as we're at the end, let's stay at the end.
Sure. Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah.
Start there.
Then we'll make a motion.
Well,
I guess particularly because it's a new section that we didn't look at mm-hmm. before. So I'll go. I tend in the direction that Commissioner Ryan is suggesting, but understanding that what staff's saying is right now they're unregulated, and this is an attempt to regulate that use. I also recognize that ugly is in the eye of the beholder, and where do you stop? And I think it's pretty easy for all of us to say that a shipping container is not a particularly attractive item. But I think kind of going along maybe Commissioner Greenberg's concept that maybe we need to be a little more deliberative about what we're trying to regulate and where, as opposed to yes or no. And so what I mean by that, and I do not have this thought through, you know, by any means, but the notion of allowing a shipping container, and I know that somewhere in the language it talked about the smaller pods, so those kind of things. a legitimate use for moving, we don't need 120 days for that. Mm-hmm. You know, something much more restrictive. 30 days is probably adequate. Maybe it's 45 if you want to be very generous, but that's a particular use and intent, certainly not regulated storage. Something that you are going to allow for a longer period of time and or in a more permanent configuration, then we should be addressing that, in my mind, through standards mm-hmm. that would screen them, and there's some language in there sort of speaking in that direction, mm-hmm. and that would be acceptable to just say no to, you know, a structure. I'm not, I could get myself there, but I can also see why I wouldn't want to go out to a neighbor who has been using one of these for his workshop or his, you know, whatever, for decades perhaps, and suddenly say, you're now not an allowable use. So I think we need to kind of be careful about that. Mm-hmm. Next question I had regarding this is, does this apply to construction sites? Because that's where I tend to see them the most. Right. And tend to be the most visible, but I thought we had language that already tied that as to the permit.
Yeah, I think construction, I think there's some language in the code, in another chapter of the code, but the assumption would be if you have an active construction site that you can, we have one at City Hall, where the new City Hall is being built, you know, that you're going to have a construction trailer and probably an office trailer. Now, if the project's abandoned,
That's a great example. So are we in violation of the way that this is written? If this were in place today, would we be at City Hall in violation?
No, I think it's because you have an active permit open. So it's
that,
allowed
that's
to
what
do
I
that.
Wanted to be sure yes. was that for... It is coming
right.
through.
Because this person is applying for a temporary use permit for a cargo container, you know, separate from, you know, for whatever reason. You know, they have, QFC has one, you know, didn't apply for it, but, you know, that would be the idea.
Right.
Like,
right.
We're QFC, we're going to have, you know, an extra container for the holidays.
Yeah, if they were to suddenly start lining the parking lot with containers,
right.
I'd have a big issue.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And some of the code, if we get into a full code chapter, you know, it talks about that from the research I've done, you know, not taking up parking spots that were already, or landscape areas.
For now, I'll stick down. Anyone else?
I agree with everything you've said, by the way. To start with, under paragraph B, 120 consecutive days, that is that per calendar year? I think you mentioned it was per calendar year.
If so,
we should just clarify that.
Yeah, I think we could do like the rest of the temporary uses and just say 120 days. I don't have a preference.
In a calendar year.
Yeah, I don't have a preference if it's consecutive.
I don't care if it's consecutive.
Different. I thought the intent was period, not like a food truck that could
mm-hmm.
recur. I thought the idea was this was, mm-hmm. that's the restriction period.
So let's use QFC in a holiday
mm-hmm.
Cargo container.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They do use them.
Mm-hmm.
So each year they would have to apply for a new temporary use permit. Is
right.
that the idea?
Right.
Okay.
You could say 120 consecutive days per year. We clarify.
Per calendar.
Well, you're already kind of doing that if you don't understand. The general conditions outlined above in 18.2040, that does say in a calendar year there.
Okay.
So.
I just think it could be clarified
further,
just because those
I
are
do.
The kinds of things applicants
right.
might argue
yeah. right.
with you on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
or,
if we mention it again,
it.
Right,
yeah,
if we mention it again here, it makes it seem like it's a different application.
Yeah.
You can figure that out. I'm
okay.
just...
Yeah.
I just want to make sure
but
that
wait.
We're talking about our understanding is that
thing.
It's 120
yeah.
calendar days per year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that everyone's understanding here
mm-hmm.
and comfortable
yeah,
with
I
it?
Think,
well, so
you
using the example of QFC wants to bring in a cargo container over the holidays, and so they bring it in mm-hmm. November or the 1st of December. Mm-hmm. It's going to span multiple
true.
Years.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So conceivably.
It started from the date of application.
Consecutive days work better. It's not tied to the calendar.
Yeah, okay.
It's just saying 120. So if you apply in December,
it would be consecutive.
That would give them more.
They're not going to move those things on and off every weekend.
Right. Yeah.
Unlikely.
What's the likelihood of these containers being refrigerated units? They're going to be running 24/7 right in the neighborhood of residential people. I think that in the commercial zone, there ought to be some strong consideration for allowing them. My objections is residential neighborhoods. Yeah. Totally. I understand the additional storage for commercial. And those people who live around the commercial area probably should expect to have some inconvenience at times.
Yeah. And I think that's what I was trying to allude to earlier, saying I think we need some variation in location, and therefore, as you're saying, it's one thing in residential, it's totally another in a commercial zone.
Totally agree.
I just want to go back to the consecutive question. So it says 120 consecutive days. So if they went 30 consecutive days, took it off site, brought it back, does the clock reset so they have 120 to go again?
No, it would be 120 within that calendar
still
year.
Total?
No.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be 120 total.
Period. Well, if you pull it out in 30,
that's why I
like 100 back.
Yeah,
total.
You still have.
The consecutive doesn't sound as tight to me, I guess.
I'm sorry. This is the way that I would have thought that this. We've said 120 consecutive days. That's your permit issue. If you pull out at 30 or 60, mm-hmm. you've completed, you're done.
Right.
If you want to come back, that's a new permit.
Right.
Well, consecutive days. When you move it, you have ended.
That's how it's written.
Yeah. You've ended your consecutive days. That's
okay.
That would be the interpretation.
Your permit isn't pulling a block of 120 consecutive days. It's pulling however long you're there. Consecutively.
Mm-hmm. My reading is this is not to exceed 120.
And it says specify.
It could be 1 day, it could be up to 120 days, no more than, but it is consecutive days.
Right.
If you remove it, you've completed your permit.
And then are you operating under the assumption that they are allowed one permit per year?
No, I'm not. So, not making comment to that at all.
Because
so would you be comfortable if they were to come in 5 different times for 25 days then and exceed the 120 days within a year, but they've applied for a new permit each time?
And
or
and
do you,
went over
120 I thought we were looking at restricting them to 120
total
within any 1 year.
And if that's what we want, that's a different wording.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That would take care of the scenario you brought up where they might swap over into a new year during the holidays for
mm-hmm.
a couple of weeks. They still have that amount of time subtracted from 120 days that they could use, for example, at the end of the following year.
Mm-hmm.
I had a minor change in D. Next to last line, it says measures approved by the planning department,
mm-hmm.
so just department name.
Mm-hmm.
And then under E, so this is the structures used for moving purposes must be on a driveway or other paved surface.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be paved or gravel surface. I know I'm thinking of my own situation where
mm-hmm.
if I put it on my paved surface, I would be blocking my driveway. But I have a big gravel surface next to the paved surface that would be perfect for that. And it wouldn't be on my grass, and I wouldn't have to put it in the street.
I guess because that still kind of covers it, doesn't it? I was thinking, should we go the reverse and say not on landscape or vegetative areas or something, but I don't know what you would do if it's just dirt. Is that what you're trying to avoid?
Yeah, so you could say placed on an existing driveway or other paved gravel
surface.
What
about blocks? Just raising it off the surface on blocks.
flexibility in that. I don't mind the idea, but I'm not sure if that would work.
I think what you're trying to get at, right, is the idea of if you putting the pod on your grass, right, on the lawn.
Right. Or potentially, if, I don't know if you'd have a hazardous waste oil that was stored inside it or something that would start leaking.
Yeah.
Well, you also have setback issues. You know, if that pile's going between your house and your neighbor's fence, you're violating a setback situation.
This would not, unless we put it right here, this wouldn't.
Usually 5 feet for accessory.
For a structure.
These wouldn't be structures.
Right. Yeah. So these, unless you want to put that in here, you could say it has to meet the setbacks.
Yeah. I think it's just assumed it's on your property.
I'm not going to let my neighbor pull in the cargo damn.
Yeah. Right up on your
view. I might have.
Even for moving purposes, like for 30 days. I mean, would you be okay with that? Because that could be written in.
I have a very short temper tonight. I'm sorry. I'm tired of these loopholes that ruin our neighborhoods. Storage areas are meant to be used for storage. Put your furniture in a storage area and drive the 2 blocks back to it if you have to. Bringing your stuff onto your residential property affects your neighbors from all the way around. It's not pleasant. And if you get one or two doing a block, it becomes a problem.
Short-term problem because they're moving.
Before moving, this goes off of Dick's comment, was I haven't actually seen any of these around town, but maybe I just need to drive around a little more, but I guess kind of in general, where are they, and like, where are they a problem, or what are the comments?
Yeah, and that's part of the reason we want to go back to council committee, because we had heard, just prohibit them, and then it's like, well, we're not getting a lot of complaints, but you drive around town and you do see them. I have pictures of ones
I
saw.
Yeah,
if you look for them, and I was going to put this with the packet of, and I'll just show you guys, like, this was out at Truck Town, this was just in the parking lot, just placed in there, this one's on North Bend Way, just kind of, construction yard, whatever. This is at the back of Safeway, that's not Safeway, it's one of the other businesses, but somebody just placed one. So, this is right downtown.
I mean, one thing this reminds me of is there was where...
this is QFC's. Again, you can just drive by because it's just there and you... Yeah. This is out off Tanner Road.
That better not be Tanner Road.
Yeah. And then another one right next door. So they placed like quite a few.
Yeah.
There's the City Hall one. See? I got us. Construction trailer.
Very nice. Maybe we can have a program to paint them, right?
Right. This is a nice one at like Walgreens in Arlington. Just again, just placed. This is the gas station at the Quad Costume.
In Arlington?
Well, there's a Walgreens or something. This was just showing a screening.
Why not?
Here's a couple that could work. And I'll pass these around. This is a brewery in Fairhaven up in Bellingham. And they've integrated it into their building. And it looks okay. So,
and they have a historic district with design standards.
Yeah. So, they're
Starbucks
not all.
Starbucks uses those cargo containers.
Yeah. Down at, I need to get a picture of that Starbucks one. And,
You say we use tax dollars to send you up there to
I did not go up there. That was Google Maps. Yeah, I didn't have a fun trip. But
To these last pictures, storage containers are also now being converted into housing.
Yeah.
And so are we studiously, are we working? I think that's what you're trying to get at in your definition.
Right.
You're not speaking to those, is that?
Right. No, not right now. And from the research the state did for us, and I have a bunch of codes from other jurisdictions. They said basically, if somebody wanted to propose a commercial or move into it, they could, and they met the design standards, and they were able to meet the codes, they could do it. What the researcher at the state told me is that you're not really seeing them for residential uses as much because of the rules they have to like basically scrub them out and clean them, and then you have to meet energy code, and you have other things that are really hard to do for residents. So.
So is the definition you provided, is that a compilation from others you've seen, or is that a
standard? The definition? Yeah, that was just a, for the purpose of this temporary use, you know, is basically we're talking about the unaltered ones, the ones that are just a story.
Okay, so how would you feel if I may ask you, Chair, a suggested edit to the definition? Really it falls into the second line there.
Okay.
So enclosures used for, enclosures intended for transportation of goods. I don't know that a shipping container by its concept is intended for storage. It's intended for shipping. And to say goods and textiles to me is repetitive. Textile is a good.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not as firm or as confident on the storing idea, but
or it could be like
talking about a shipping container. It's intended to ship.
Yeah.
Well, whether it's sitting or in motion, it's for the transport of.
So you want
to
say...
When you say storing to me, that implies to me more of a permanent nature, more to what Dick's, you know, concern is in regard to something that's staying there, truly storing or being used for some other use than the transportation of goods.
Okay. We can look at what the definition
is. Intended for transportation of goods.
But yeah, I agree that the storing is what's happening.
Right.
That's what we're trying to address. And so I'm saying by definition, it's not as empty for storage.
What I am seeing,
that's fine.
And I can visualize it happening in towns that support tiny houses, is that there's no storage in these tiny homes or smaller homes, in even the 1,200 square feet that we're allowing in our town. Mm-hmm. So people are using these things to become storage that is not constructed, pre-constructed in their home. And that's a go around, and damn it, we don't have to accept that. Not in our residential community. Mm-hmm. No one uses their garages. You go in that new home across from the lumber shop that's going in. Their garages, when you see the doors up, they're just jammed to the gunnels with goods. There's no cars in there. And so people are using these things to augment the stories that they lack when they bought the house.
Get a couple questions and comments here. What would happen with the existing containers if we banned them, let's say?
Yeah, well, they would be existing non-conforming uses. And we talked with our attorney about, you know, is there a way to get rid of them over time? And, you know, amortization, is there a way to... And really, that's just tricky. I mean, they don't have much value as they sit there, so... They're not worth a lot. Over time, if you don't allow new or you have a whole chapter that addresses it, you're not going to see these just placed. So over time, they're going to go away, is what our attorneys thought. And it really, we were looking at some language, but treating them the same as everything else. Like, now you're an existing non-conforming use. So you can't expand it, you can't, you know, add to it, you can keep it there, but over time, they will go away then.
Why is a storage container a temporary, severable piece of essentially personal property considered a use at all?
Yeah.
From a code standpoint.
Well, it'd be an ex... You
I
could
mean, if
say
I
it's...
a swing set, that's not a use.
Yeah.
Right? That's a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems like we should be able to... Mm-hmm. More actively prohibit, regulate those kinds of things. And it's not structure. The attorney didn't read it.
Well, she's like, you know, see what feedback you get. We can, it's a little squirrely, but, you know, Yeah, you can outright, and we can outright just prohibit them. And then we have the issue of the ones we have now. And then we have the code enforcement and the staffing issue of, are we really going to go around and issue, because some of the codes I saw were like, issue fines, and, you know, this talks about if you exceed the 120 days code enforcement. Some of them were like, we'll issue you a fine, we're going to cite you, you're going to have to pay, you know.
But we're going down that path anyway, just by adopting these temporary use.
We're getting some enforcement,
right?
Yeah, for the ones that come in new
we're
and apply.
We're creating now, essentially, a new
code to
somebody
have to watch,
has to
right?
Permit, so staff now has to
more work.
Review,
mm-hmm.
approve, and
mm-hmm.
then enforce. So we're already headed down
yeah.
that path mm-hmm. just by putting this in place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seemed like, I'm sorry, Scott, I know you had some others. I didn't mean to jump over your comments. And it seemed like the intent of this was to allow for, within some constraints, the use of underutilized property to facilitate some kind of economic
mm-hmm.
Income, which seems to apply to commercial zones, and there's some uses that fit in the parks, like farmers markets and you know those kind of things. So it seems like there's, especially when we're talking about storage containers, there's a line between
mm-hmm.
residential and staying within the spirit of what this temporary use ordinance is trying to do, and that stimulates some use of the underutilized property. So when we mix the two,
mm-hmm.
the residential, it seems like it's kind of confusing kind of clouding what were the overall strategy
mm-hmm.
that kind of led to this in the first place. And the cargo containers in residential areas is like its own thing, and it's a bit of a red herring to me being included
mm-hmm.
with all of these other more commercial uses. So I can see regulating storage containers as it pertains to how they're used in commercial zones
mm-hmm.
on a temporary basis. But the residential stuff, which is either people are using it for storage, like Councilmember Ryan was saying, or moving, like
mm-hmm.
the pods, you see
mm-hmm.
those all over the place too. It's like a different
mm-hmm.
problem with maybe a different solution. And this is a solution that's trying to.
Well, I was just going to ask for clarity because what popped into my head as you were talking, what I think you're suggesting is that perhaps this is in the wrong place.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where I'm headed with the thought process.
Is that perhaps this entire subject is not about temporary use.
For cargo containers.
Yeah, cargo containers.
Yeah, so conditions D and E reference residential, otherwise... it's just applying to that use, that cargo container. You know, and what we're saying about residential, similarly to commercial in D, is that we don't want to see it. You know, screen it, put it somewhere behind. And E is saying for moving purposes. So you could separate it out, but I think if you still want to give residential the ability to move and use a container or put something in their backyard that you're going to essentially want the same thing.
Well, but I guess kind of where I'm, if I'm moving and I want to go rent a, I don't think that I need to go to City Hall and obtain
right.
a permit to set a pod in my driveway.
Right.
I don't think we're going there.
Well, then we are going there.
Well, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly where
enforcement is one thing. Are we going to go enforce it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're there, if somebody's pod is there for 6 months, this gives us the ability to say, you didn't get a permit, and we need to enforce it. And yes, ideally, you would go get a permit, but people don't always.
Which is okay, I think it's,
yeah.
it's, but I think we should more clearly articulate the different scenarios between
mm-hmm.
the residential scenario, which is going to be around people
mm-hmm.
moving or using it as an annex or their garage or something.
Mm-hmm.
And create some regulations around that use
mm-hmm.
and the timing for that use, and then where we might want to entertain cargo containers to facilitate economic development, which is another, you know, that's where the food trucks and those kind of things come in. And then where we want to regulate or limit cargo containers as adjacent storage places to commercial businesses that can become eyesores over time. Because they, Safeway, QFC, all those examples, those businesses probably don't consider them to be temporary.
Right.
No.
And they don't consider them to be eyesores.
Right. So now we're putting a regulation in place that really starts to change their business.
Yeah. So this is one piece of it, and we thought these types of uses where you need storage for a certain amount of time or you need to store because it's seasonal kind of fit under the umbrella of temporary uses. I mean, I see what you're saying is the distinction. And then we can, I think we can further refine it in a, in another chapter where we drill it down more. You know, or you go with the permitted use table and you just say, not allowed, you know, unaltered is not allowed in this zone or this use. And so I think there's other things that we should do in our code to address this, not just here.
Right.
This was just kind of a starting point for temporary uses, you know, under that umbrella of when are we going to see cargo containers under temporary uses. And I think if like a Safeway or somebody wants to put one in permanent, then we gotta have, we gotta have it painted the same color, we gotta have it blended in, you know, you gotta maybe some landscaping, a fence, you gotta integrate it a little bit better than just plopping it down and leaving it in the parking lot.
Something I've kind of been keeping track of notes, and one thing that pops out to me is what might be an addition that could meet some of this is an exemption section. And the things that I would include in that exemption section are does not apply to active construction sites. And we'd have to work to make sure the wording is such that they're an active construction site. It's not, what's that?
Under permit.
Under permit. I have also added in listening to this all, if the container meets building and design standards, this would not preclude it from being used for a residential or commercial use. And I say this in reference to those images that Jamie passed around or the Starbucks that are repurposing them, or if Safeway wanted to use it, they would have to come in and meet the building code. If they're in the floodplain, they have to anchor it. They'd have to have eaves. They would have to do the design standards. And then I also would suggest, it sounds like, does not apply to residential zones when container is used for moving purposes and on site for less than 30 days, I threw down here.
It's a good suggestion.
Yeah,
I had a question. Is there section E there talks about moving purposes, and then my other question was like dumpsters. If you have like a big remodel job, so is that called out or fall under?
That wouldn't be allowed. That would not be addressed through this,
right.
That we just
be through that again through that active the construction application.
Well, not if they don't have a permit open. If we say it's under a permit,
what if it's not under a permit and you're just
remodeling
stuff
kitchen,
away in your house or something?
So I haven't heard that those are a problem.
Yeah,
to be honest, it seems like typically
they're
when someone brings those in, one they're paying. The renting fee, but also it's like they're getting rid of a problem, whether it was maybe a, you know, rundown home or a, you know, maybe they're making it better. And like you said, there's a fee attached.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Makes sense. As there are for most of these cargo containers, although you could purchase them. Now, I don't know what they cost.
So they're almost becoming their own architectural style.
Yes. Right. Right.
And then what are some of the uses, again, that commercial uses them? Safeway or QFC was mentioned for what again? What
I assume dry storage.
What's in there?
Well, I know.
I haven't been in.
QF chairs, Christmas trees. I don't know.
I had a situation where
Yahoo Manager Special.
Yeah, QFC was using them around Thanksgiving and Christmas. They did have the refrigerated cargo container, which is running 24/7 for the frozen turkeys and hams, and that was below a 4-story. Apartment building, so we got lots of complaints about that.
Yeah.
I guess a couple thoughts as this conversation has continued is the like the cargo containers title. I mean, I'm like, I just kind of penciled in like temporary containers might be better. Just these are just some thoughts here I'll just throw out to the group.
Storage
containers. I know some people have mentioned maybe banning them residential, so I think that that could be a way to go. I don't see the purpose for them. And then having them for commercial with a 120-day limit makes sense. I can see them for moving. I can see them for a construction project. But, yeah, I mean, I guess one question I have, though, for residential would be, someone might want to use it as a shed or something.
Right.
And I know that's like some people, we're envisioning throwing like junk in there or something, but you could actually cut out a window and make a little better door and stuff. So, but that wouldn't be allowed if we go the route of...
Right,
well,
that's why I kind of hate going...
Under this exemption, under the exemption I propose, it would, though. So if they met the building and the design standards, it could be used as a storage.
Those design standards are pretty limiting.
I was going to say it comes down to cost.
That's a lot of cost.
For an accessory residential structure, no. I mean, there's not a lot to it.
If it's being used for residents, but,
for
just
commercial,
to hang it to a long chairs talking to, I'd follow it up with, again, kind of goes to the question of how much of a problem really is this?
Right.
You know, most, if not all, HOAs have regulations around the size and placement of sheds, and this would seem to be managed in the same way. And of course, most new single-family lots, you couldn't possibly get one of these on anyway after the house was there. So in that sense, it's self-regulating, and that is our future. And so it feels in many ways we're really addressing those property owners who have long established larger lots that aren't really, you know, the current and the future. And so, I'd want to be cautious about how punitive we get against citizens, which again, kind of goes back to our more small town nature. And I don't, most of them aren't very pretty either. I agree with that. And I don't want them, you know, all over the place. But again, if we're thinking about it, and this is specific to the residential, if we're thinking about the forward, there's less and less opportunity for this to occur. And maybe through the HOA, there are other provisions that we require to be in HOA documents. That might be another direction that could be taken to help regulate that should it need to be in that sense.
Yeah, we don't allow automobiles to be parked on home sites unless they're licensed to run on the city street. If they're derelict,
have to be running.
They're towed.
They have to be gone. Right.
Yeah, we enforce that. I don't, why are we talking about these dumpsters? Some kind of a holy grail.
I mean, I think the 120 does put some limitations, as Jamie's mentioned, you know, more than there is now. I think another way to go could be to just think of it going along the lines of not allowing them is to say, well, you know, build a shed, or as Dick says, get a storage unit. Mm-hmm. You know, so thinking of it in that way, there's other ways to do it than this hunk of metal sitting there, you know. And that would allow the ones that are there, so we're not taking it away from anyone. Has one already. I'm not sure. It's just some thoughts out there.
I've got an arching proposal if we've kind of gotten out most of the individual thoughts.
I have one thought as well, just related to dealing with maybe ones that are already out there, or if there gets to be too many on a site. There was some trailers that were by the Chinook. The new Chinook lumber, and also there was a couple there, and all of a sudden there was like 15.
The RVs?
Like mobile home RVs, and those were not allowed to be in that number. And, so how was that written? How was that written, that part of the code?
Phew, that was a code enforcement issue on Tim McCallum's property just north of Chinook, and it might have been the abandoned vehicles, but through code enforcement, and we were able to get them to move all of them off. I'd have to look back at what section was being cited. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But you're right, there was a reason, there was our ability to require
those
them to
were
move
vehicles
those.
Too.
Yeah. I could do some research and bring that back.
I think I thought of it when Gary was talking about the use, whether it was a use or whether it was just an item there. Mm-hmm. Kind of lost my train of thought there, but it was just an issue that we had, kind of an eyesore type of thing like we're talking
right.
about, and mm-hmm. how we manage that and how it's written as maybe a reference.
So I'm going to jump into propose to commissioners that I don't think this section is ready for prime time, and I think we're going to have a decision to make on if after we go through the rest of the chapter, if we're ready to move forward with that, that perhaps we look at if we're ready to pass the rest mm-hmm. of it, because we do have a need to get that moving forward, at least reasonable need to get that moving forward, then this could be revisited at a later time, mm-hmm. this particular section. So perhaps we just have to move on and go back to page one and decide
yeah.
that.
And I think I have some good input too, and to take to council committee and say, hey, this is kind of what planning commission's thoughts were, and do we want to do a full-blown chapter? Do we want to prohibit and leave it at that? Where are we going to land here? And get some direction from them too, and come back to you guys.
Yeah.
So in principle, I like what you were suggesting, Rob. From a practical standpoint, kind of reminds me of the conversation we were just having where we're taking some action on the critical areas, mm-hmm. knowing that there's some other study that mm-hmm. may not actually get done.
Right.
We think it will, but we don't know when. And so the cargo containers seems like it's an issue that should be addressed, particularly on the commercial side. I agree with Rob with trying to go out to some of the rural properties, larger lots that have had these containers, and
yeah.
turn them into a new process.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's really a problem that needs to be solved at this
yeah.
point. But the commercial use in these commercial zones, I think that is something. And so by tabling that, I think we run the risk of it not getting done. Mm-hmm. And we do have something that, which isn't necessarily bad, but something that I think is equally important to everything else that's in the ordinance that we would pass if we deferred the cargo containers. We now have no certainty on if that will get addressed, when that will get addressed, how it will get addressed, and whether we'll be part of that conversation as a planning commission or not. So I'd almost prefer to just defer it, push this out a little bit, allow the whole chapter, allow Jamie and Lynn to come back with some of the exemptions and some of the language that we've kind of talked about, and kind of pick it up and see if we can add a little bit more definition to the cargo containers and get closer to the mark on what we want to see, what we don't want to see. Before we make a motion and take a vote, I'm just letting everybody know kind of where my head's at.
Let's see what our comments are on the rest of it.
Sure.
Because that may,
yeah.
that in and of itself may dictate
yep.
the whole thing.
Scott has a lot of comments I just heard.
Yeah, I think.
Hi, Michael.
Gary, in general, that's what we've done, is when we have this much change that would occur, we just kind of pass off to the next meeting, have staff
yeah.
kind of take another crack at it, and then usually it's worked out pretty good, and
yeah.
then it's kind of tightened up, and then we can fine-tune it and
yeah.
kind of approve it the next meeting.
Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that if we think we're heading that way. It just felt to me like this is really early. This is a mm-hmm. real first blush, whereas I feel like the majority of the rest of this, we're really at the end game, and so that's what, do we really hold up what is otherwise ready to go? I don't see why we couldn't immediately.
section back in the next one. But, again, that's just where my head was. Yeah. I hear what you're saying.
Let's see what you got.
On page one.
I pick an easy one if I did it away.
Sure.
In section paragraph D of 020,
yep.
You use the term TUP. In section A is the first time you use temporary use permits, but you don't indicate
what
TUP it stands for.
Thank you.
Good. Actually, it's, used in A of 015.
Right.
And also in 015, the lettering is off. You have A, B, B, and C. I just caught that as I'm looking. It just kind of hit me.
Could we just go over the type 1 and type 2?
So the difference in them is type 1's an administrative decision, so they would apply with the land use permit, and staff would review it to the code and issue a decision from the CED director. A type 2 requires that it goes through the public process, properties are noticed, a hearing examiner through the conditional use permit, a hearing examiner would be hired at the expense of the applicant, and there would be a public hearing held.
I'm on page one still. Okay. I had a question on it's the 18-22, the 020, and section A. It just talks about in that first sentence, scheduled days and times of operation, and I was just wondering if that was part of the old code and kind of the thought, because you're trying to get away from that. So I'm just wondering if you should say, like, estimated or proposed days.
Yeah, the reason it was left in was an intentional, because we are limiting them still to 120 calendar days. That's the reason it's been left in there. We could do, I don't know if we want to do estimated. We need some way to ensure they're not
going over
120 days. And
is that tracked, though, after they get the permit or
no.
not?
Okay. Well, we've only done this for one food truck, and they actually did stick to it, it seems, to the T.
Yeah.
We had no reason to believe they didn't.
Yeah.
So I think it would be if we had reason to believe they were no longer in compliance with their permit, they would start to be tracked more closely, but I don't think staff's going out there each day with a clicker.
Yeah.
For 120 days.
Well, I was just reading your intro there, and it just said, they must state at the time of application exactly what dates they will be operating in a calendar year. So how are we getting away from that? How are they going to know that it's not the exact dates? It's just 120, I guess.
What you're reading the intro in A?
Well, no, just what you had said in your kind of staff
right.
Your report to the commission, and you just said the concern is that currently a food truck is allowed through a cumbersome process and must state at the time of application exactly what dates they will be operating in a calendar year. So,
I think that's a good point.
I know you guys will be administering it, so it's on you.
That's a good point. So we are still asking for that if we're sticking with the 120 days requirement.
If I could, to me the operational word is the last one on the second sentence is proposed. Proposed use, scheduled days and times of operation, location map, site plan. I guess I'm reading pretty much that entire parenthetical as it's all the proposed.
Just give staff the ability.
I guess proposed and scheduled are a little different.
Well proposed schedule. I plan to be here each Thursday, Friday, Saturday for the following 3 months.
Okay. Yeah, as long as I think the intent is there from the staff to implement that. So.
Yeah, and this language gives the staff the ability to do code enforcement if needed. if it becomes a problem, you can go back and look and say, wait a minute.
Not concerned about overusing it over just so that, not the applicants will probably read this code beforehand, but if they did, they may not see that we're actually trying to help them out.
I think that now that it's 120 days too, I would envision there'd be a range of days. Like you said, it could be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or this month date to this month date, as opposed to the 424, you know, 425, where we saw in the past the list of the dates. But you bring up a good point. Okay. But I think from staff, I don't see a recommendation to change that. So we can keep that accountability piece.
Okay. Just one other thing on B, again, more on staff, but if 15 days is enough time for you to, and then you have to decide within 10 after that, 15 prior to the requested date. So, I don't know, it seems generous.
That's a good point, and I looked at Jamie on this one too. What I do like about it is it allows somebody to have some spontaneity, which doesn't happen very often within municipal permitting processes.
A question I had was if
I would ask your thoughts.
Yeah, you guys can just consider it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if this applies under the food truck section or here, but it just has to do with applications and just knowing, like, No Boat Brewing has food trucks in there, and they have different ones in there. So would they have the same permit for multiple trucks?
So we did discuss that last time, was who exactly that question, who applies for the permit and who's held to that period. Is it the property or the applicant, the temporary use? So for E was my attempt to address that, and so let's talk about if I did it and if you have some suggestions. So my goal, I'll tell you what my goal was, is to say that I don't care who applies for the permit. If it is a property, if it's Napa who's going to have a food truck there, but they want a different one every Saturday, they can certainly do one permit. I would rather not process 120 permits. But if it's the food truck that wants to be at, you know, different locations around town, we don't want them to be able to circumnavigate that. So my attempt was to say temporary use permits may be applied for by either the individual operator or the property owner if the use is on private property, so long as neither the use or property exceed maximum days allowed in one calendar year. I would love suggestions as to how to make that clear.
So
it's
I
not
think
clear.
That was also kind of as the public comment we got, it kind of goes that a lot of these are not just sole proprietor trucks, right? That it's a business, and that to me that was still allowing that business who has a permit can alternate the type of the truck that's coming, but they're still regulated by their permit that. That number of days.
Yeah. So if you have suggestions or if you feel like that could be clearer, I'm.
I only have one, and it's not really related to that. Oh. It's simply that, as I read that E about who could apply, it seemed to me that in either case, well, no. If it's the business applying, that you wanted the owner sign off. If they're going to be on an owner property, you want to know that the owner's approved that, right? So an affidavit or something, do we have that somewhere?
We do require that on the permit.
Okay.
You have to have the property owner's, to submit any land use application, you have to have a property owner's signature.
What about, who's using a No Boat example, they only have one truck there at a time.
Mm-hmm.
If you go down to Portland, there's like 15 food trucks on the property.
I think,
what if they have two food trucks?
I actually did add something to that in the food truck section after having a comment. Okay. Yeah.
Get down there.
Yeah. Okay.
Everybody focus on
that. Yeah, I know.
we're talking about temporary use of not food trucks. First page, real quick.
Yep.
I think this is just a quick one for me, just because I'm not aware of how it works. C, under 15, the fee for temporary use reviews shall be established by city schedule and collected time. Is that a standard line that needs to be in there, or is that set different for temporary use that they could be, they could have an additional fee applied to them?
That's a standard for a permit, and it's a way that we don't put into the code a fee that's going to change each year, likely. Well, actually, a lot of our fees don't change, but a lot are do change with, as Rob is aware. But, for example, our floodplain permit has been $150 for as long as I've been there. Well, so
more and more of our fee structure is set to adjust for the COLA.
Yeah.
Well, I'm more concerned about, because I think you handle that by just calling out the city's schedule, right? That's the fee.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fees can change. Mm-hmm. I'm more concerned about additional fee. Like, is there a temporary use more susceptible to having an additional fee applied to them?
Mm. Only
than the standard fee?
Good point. So, only off the cuff, thinking about it, only if it were to require a conditional use permit, only if it were to be processed as a type 2, it would then start triggering staff review time, the cost of the hearing examiner, all of that would be borne by the applicant.
Okay. So I think what might help answer your question is the section you were looking at, C, mm-hmm. is redundant with B.
Right, that's why I couldn't get that.
And that second sentence mm-hmm. added to B, I think, gives us some context. So we're saying, we use a city standard fee schedule for temporary use fee, but if there's additional staff work involved, then we can charge right. more.
Yeah, maybe C.
So maybe get rid of C.
Yeah.
Well, it's already in B. It's the,
yeah,
the black
that's a good point. I think I had, it might have gotten moved there from a different spot. Or maybe I just added it because I wanted to charge
and
twice.
Confused.
I was excited.
See that.
P.
I just think that for someone reading that, it might throw up a red flag that, oh, wait, this might be an additional fee that mm-hmm. I'm not planning on, when that's not really the purpose here. It's the type 2 would be the where you expect.
Yep, you're right. Nope, our purpose is that we love it when we can actually tell someone exactly how much something's going to cost.
Okay. So I'm hearing that we're striking the last sentence, be it C
right.
or D or whatever.
Yeah,
the
last
one. I struck C. D.
C.
C.
See what could be.
Yeah. Just want to check. Just want to check in with the commissioners. We're coming up. We passed our 8:45 item, and I think we still have some more discussion. So we want to extend
to allow till 9, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to make it.
I don't think so either. I move we extend the meeting till 9:15. Set off the risk. I was thinking at 9:30, but
see if we get it done.
Keep it tight.
I am second at 9:15.
Second by Commissioner McFarland. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, it's.
He bit his tongue almost.
She's he's neutral.
Election of our illustrious offices. We're going to be passing on that again tonight.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see how that goes. All right, so it is unanimous. We're going to go to 9:15. Rob, were you working on page 2?
I'm done. There.
I had one on 1822040. This occurs later in the food truck section also. The last sentence, temporary uses are not allowed in public parking stalls along East North Bend Way. I think the intent there is in the right of way. Public, not allowed mm-hmm. public parking stalls, which are actually in
within the right
of way.
You're right.
Right. Because there are parking stalls on private property that are accessed from North Bend, like the Chevy dealer.
But they wouldn't be public then.
Well, the public could park in there. I just think if you just say within the right of way or something like that.
I'm sorry, can you point out, so in
1822
in the right of,
you can just say temporary uses are not allowed in public parking stalls within the right of way of East North Bend Way, and the rest between Ballarat and Bendigo.
I'm good with that, but as long as we're on that, I wanted to add that I had it in the truck section, Ballarat to Bendigo. Seems to me we've improved the same same street profile that you're referencing as why we wanted to do that extends to Sydney. And so why are we not going to Sydney with that, if that's the logic?
Yeah, we chose those as we felt they were the most congested, both visually. I think part of the visual is there's the island in the center, which the vegetated island, which constricts it down significantly, whereas past Ballarat towards Sydney, you have the turn lane, so the feeling of congestion isn't quite as great. There's not as much traffic. There's not as many turn. Part of the concern was the turning movements. You might not be able to see past a food truck. But that was a starting point for this discussion. Like I said, I think the feeling was it was more congested. It would create more of sight distance issues, people milling around out in the street within the section we put down here.
So I'm a bit torn on it because I really want to find a way to allow those to work,
mm-hmm.
but I really don't think there is a substantial difference in what you're describing. I think sight distance congestion is just as prevalent in that one block.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of the light as it is on the east side of the light.
And there are more driveways in that stretch you're talking about.
Well, in fact, there are driveways.
There are driveways,
we're
yeah.
about to eliminate the only potential driveway in the Ballarat to Bendigo. Mm-hmm. So I'm also trying to picture then what.
Mm-hmm.
Where would they be able to locate, and that's problematic as well. So,
yep. So, ones that pop into my head are obviously the side streets, Main, or as you go down towards Sydney, they could be on Sydney or potentially in the park and ride. Let's see, what else is there right in that section?
They could be in, on the street. Past Sydney,
right, in front
which
of the
would be
courthouse.
In front of the park and ride, mm-hmm. or in front of the little store that's on that corner. I see there's parking there. Or as you're saying, it could be on Sydney, or maybe they make arrangements with the private property lot there. But you know, there are mm-hmm. possibilities. I don't think it's ideal to one of the businesses that's one of the proponents of this. But I don't think we also should be zeroing in on a business.
Yep. So there are the way this is written, it'd also be allowed in the alley that's getting closed off.
Or you're talking about
the alley with the pedestrian improvements that's happening.
Well, right, but that's what I'm saying. That's
right.
That's an allowable location.
Right.
It would be off the street.
Right.
I'm saying is that's a good way that not allowing them on North Bend Way between Bendigo and Ballarat gets addressed with a good option.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have that? Is there a similar reasonable option if we extend it to Sydney? Say, well, I can do three. They might not be the most ideal, but there are options.
I see what you're saying.
Can I ask a really good question?
Mm-hmm.
Just from a different angle. For a lot of the other permitted uses that are in this regulation, they're not location specific. They're like zone specific,
mm-hmm.
commercial zone parks, et cetera. When we're talking about food trucks, if this ordinance wasn't location specific, it was more general, like the other locations, when people came in with a permit for a particular location, do you have the ability to approve with conditions, deny because you don't feel like the location is appropriate?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm just wondering, do we have to cover every conceivable parcel in these commercial zones? Because these food trucks are all different shapes and sizes and, those kind of things. And is there a way to and address what those concerns are just through the normal staff.
So I think what it is that you're getting at that would do that is in 1822.030. C, the temporary use will not significantly impact public health, safety, or convenience, or create traffic hazards or congestion, or otherwise interrupt or interfere with the normal conduct or uses and activities in this vicinity.
Right.
That's what I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you were asking. We do have the ability to add conditions to the permit. It says the director can approve with conditions or deny the application. The reason that food trucks are so much more specific is I think there's the concern that we have a lot of brick and mortar establishments that are investing into our community, and this would be a user that would come that would be in competition with them. So we've spent a lot of time trying to find that balance. I think it's more likely the use you'll see that would actually be, well, maybe I'll just leave it at that. I think it's the use that you would see that would come and be in competition with brick and mortar. The other uses that pop into my mind are the seasonal fruit, maybe flowers. They're not necessarily going to be direct competition with QFC, for example. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
I don't know if it did.
The thing I keep kind of going back to and telling myself when I'm reading these is I feel like we set aside food trucks to a whole other set of standards. And so when we're looking at these general conditions, is it better not to think of it more as something other than a food truck?
Yeah.
Since we do have a whole section of food trucks. Does that help any?
I was looking the other way around, actually. I was thinking, can we just treat food trucks like any of the other allowable temporary uses and use mm-hmm. the staff discretion on whether yeah. the proposed location is appropriate or not, rather than trying to regulate specific locations for a specific temporary use like food
right.
trucks.
I think one of the concerns from the last meeting that we
I wasn't there, yeah.
Okay.
So that's good.
One of the parts that at least I had a problem with was food trucks specifically tying that to the brick and mortar, because that is more, to me, that's more of the competition coming in, which you wouldn't want to take away from the brick and mortar, that's what she was saying. If you think of the other temporary uses other than food trucks, the ones that come to my mind are really competitive with a brick and mortar.
But
right, and so that to me, that says that you need those additional regulations to food trucks specifically.
But we allow food trucks today, right? There's a process.
We do.
Okay.
We do.
Sort of.
And it's a cumbersome process. I get it. And
right.
You know, it's not clear.
Yep. Yep.
How they predict what days
yep.
and times. I get that part
yep.
of it. That's much more procedural. But right now, we do allow food trucks.
Right.
Right, so there isn't anything that prescribes where they go
correct.
Or where they don't go, who they can compete with or who they don't compete with.
Correct.
And it doesn't seem to be
correct.
An issue from the current brick and mortar establishments.
Yeah, what I shared the last time was, I've been here 5 years, Jamie's been here much longer, so she has more history, but I believe there's been maybe 3 requests for food trucks. For someone that was looking to come back regularly and not just for one event, only one of them were willing to commit to go through the permit process. I'm not sure what turned the other two away, but one's done it that's actually went through the permitting process. This doesn't apply to someone doing a special event, so the block party, the
right.
farmers markets, if an HOA wanted to have a party, this doesn't apply to it. You're correct that it has not been, you know, the floodgates of food trucks coming. We are getting a lot more questions about it, and I think that food trucks need the critical mass to make it worth their time to come out, and that's why you see them at maybe the block party. What we're seeing is that we might, which is a good thing, we're starting to get that critical mass with our population growing, with more events or with more draws bringing people downtown. We're starting to get that critical mass, and we're starting to have more inquiries. We're having a lot of... we've had quite a few businesses approach about hosting them for, like, so Compass, for example, has a movie night, has they sell alcohol out of it, they want a food truck in front. Right now, it's easier for them to say, I'm just not going to get a permit and I'll do it. You know, I'm not saying they did this, but it's easier for a person to just do it on the weekend and not get a permit because we can't clearly say this is how you do it. So this will make it clear and a permit that we can hand to them, as well as we are starting to see the critical, you know, I don't know exactly what that tipping point is. I don't have I'm not the business behind the food truck, but we're getting more inquiries. So I think we're going to start to see it as our population grows that it is more of a desirable use downtown.
Or at Torgerson Park or something. If yeah, regardless there,
of where it is, yeah. It will represent some form of competition for the current brick and mortar establishment.
Yes.
Some people view it as that.
Yes. I spent most of my knowledge as to the mood of the restaurants downtown comes from one business owner, so that's not a comprehensive view, but it's one person that's very vocal, but it's given me great feedback, so I take it, I'm super thankful to have it. It goes both ways. The first one is competition downtown is somebody that might drive downtown and choose to go to the food truck as opposed to their restaurant, whereas if it's at Torgerson, if it's a destination, the person drove out there to go to that food truck, so they were not drawn away from that brick and mortar. On the other hand, that person recognizes that the more destinations you have downtown, the more people you're going to have walking around downtown, the more likely that somebody will say, I'm going to go downtown and decide where to go. Not, I know this place is going to have a 30-minute hour wait, so I'm not even going to go downtown. So ironically enough, this person said, if you're going to allow them, they need to be there for a long term so people can feel confident that they'll have multiple options. And so it's just kind of, you know, it's a lot of speculating and hope that your business will survive as a restaurant.
If I could share, I did my own sort of informal poll with restaurants along those lines.
Yeah.
Both of those and a third one, which was specific more to a couple types of restaurants, which is I don't consider them a competition, so it doesn't matter to me. Right?
That I did hear that as well.
Really about the type of the user experience. Patron. This is so far apart that that's immaterial.
Mm-hmm. But you're not alone in having all these conversations. Like I said, some cities have just said, no, we don't allow them because they get so tricky and into the actual business model of nobody wants to put a brick and mortar business out of business. So it does get tricky. And then Snoqualmie says we don't touch it. If they're in the street, they have to get a street use permit. But otherwise, we do not restrict them one way or the other. So there's both ends of the spectrum.
Volition is talking about having a food truck, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
Should we, Gary, I'm not sure, again, if this is part of what you were suggesting, but I'll say as you were talking about it, kind of came to me was maybe coming back to the section on food truck specific, and maybe we should be looking at that as being strictly of where they vary from the rest instead of an also, because that was where I was tripping with the restriction on parking North Bend Way. It's well, why we're just speaking to two places. Anytime we speak to anything in more than one place, we're guaranteed to trip up.
Mm-hmm.
So if what would be different in that? Your point, what's different if it's a flower truck, a food truck, or whatever, if site distance congestion X is an issue in this stretch of the street, then it would seem like more likely to apply to any use, not just a food truck. And therefore,
if the uses,
we can speak to it in general versus calling it out again in the food truck sections.
Does. I guess, you know, I'm still struggling here with how to prescribe locations
at all. Yeah.
Because I think going back to why are we having the discussion on temporary uses, if we want property owners to better utilize their property and generate some economic growth both for themselves in the form of renting out their vacant lot, for example, or space on their lot. If the brick and mortar establishment don't view that as competition. They view that as a good thing, and it allows certain property owners to derive some rent from these food trucks. I think that's one thing. If what we're trying to do is promote economic growth in the downtown by allowing kind of food trucks in an economy of scale, which is what you're suggesting, right? There has to be enough of them to really make a difference. Then I think that's something that's a little bit different. And I think the more we try to prescribe locations, I think the more we dilute both of those objectives.
Well, I think what we're trying to do, instead of prescribe a location, we're just trying to restrict a particular congested location. That's the way that I'm
Well, it's
for any temporary use.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Whether it could be somebody putting up a tent and selling flowers.
But the food truck section specifically talks about streets and locations where none of the other temporary uses really talk about specific locations.
Right. So,
except for the general condition where Rob pointed out that it's redundant.
Yeah.
So, I'm happy to move if what I'm hearing, and I think it makes sense that we do treat all temporary uses equal. In my mind, food trucks are one of the largest temporary uses, and I guess that's where they started to be. But I can't think of another temporary use that would set up in a parking stall that is not a large one as well. So maybe that's going to be the case.
And if you look at page 4, since we're talking about food trucks, why don't we just jump there? Paragraph A is redundant with 040D, so that's a redundancy. Paragraph B is unique to food trucks, but that might be something you could put in general conditions about any temporary use has to be kept in a state of good repair. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not junky and messy, and if they have equipment, you know, if it's somebody selling shave ice, you know, you want their equipment to work well and not spew a bunch of smoke out or dripping oil and all the whatever. C was something we talked about at length last time about prohibiting food trucks in non-residential zones. So I think that might be specific to food trucks. I think we do allow other, I can't remember if we allow other temporary uses in.
Well, no, it talks about the other zones. Temporary uses as being in commercial, they can go in commercial zones, parks, but not residential.
Okay, so that might be redundant. Yeah, I'm just trying to move us along here. And then D was not restricting food truck to the annual 120-day limit. And this has to do with the improvements, so that's probably okay, unless you wanted the food truck to get a conditional use permit and then be subject to whatever conditions a director or a hearing examiner or whatever puts on that temporary use, whether it's a food truck or a flower stand.
So if I could elaborate on the reason behind this one a little bit, it's been a little bit edited since our past meeting, but the reason behind it was we've been talking about temporary uses that are going on unimproved property where somebody has not invested in the infrastructure of the city, they're not paying taxes, they're not paying bills, but if a business is and investing in the community, doing all those things, then it's a different nature, and that's where this provision came from, but that's to be discussed with you all as well.
Yeah, I was kind of worrying about the 120 as well. I'm just going back to the Portland thing. I know it's a very different city than ours, but they have, that must be like unlimited time mm-hmm. there. I'm not sure if the same ones are there. And I don't know, it's 4 months what we allow. Or through a uncertain loophole, I guess you could go longer. But maybe this is a good introduction to it and we can see our toes, but we may want, like, I was just thinking, like, if there's a little mm-hmm. group of four somewhere mm-hmm. more on the east end of town that could be desirable as a piece of land that's built out. So a little place to go get Mexican food, Indian food, I don't know, something like that, some different types. So that's what I had asked earlier, and I wasn't sure where that's in there. it's it, where it's listed as far as multiple, or so if we do two?
Well, I did a nod to address it, which was in the downtown commercial zone. No more than one food truck is permitted at any one time per establishment, and that was actually to try and get away from what I've heard called a food truck rodeo, is what you're okay. referencing. And this was after talking to a business owner who was saying where you're really going to start to take away from the brick and mortar is when there is this food court feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And parking is it more of an issue than maybe on the standard time. Mm-hmm.
Is that not already addressed with E? By being mm-hmm. sponsored by a brick and mortar and having to be adjacent to that.
But I'm not talking about the downtown commercial zone.
You're saying anywhere, so.
Yeah, yeah. But they couldn't be anywhere because they have to be adjacent to their sponsor.
Outside of the downtown commercial zone, they wouldn't have to be next to the brick and mortar establishment.
Okay, that's what I'm missing.
Yeah, it goes back to C, yeah. right? Yeah, so if it was just a property that, you know, that where there was yeah. 10 parking spaces, and then you put 4 food trucks there. You know, someone could do that, correct?
They could do that okay. the way this is written right yeah. now, just not in our downtown.
Yep, yeah. Okay, that's. So. I just thought that might be a good idea. It is a lot.
So did I catch? Might have played it a little forward, but Commissioner Greenberg in the food truck section. What I believe I heard was you suggested strike A,
right.
move B to general,
yeah.
strike C,
yeah.
Keep D, but perhaps there's wording to be done there. I wasn't sure what about E and keep F.
Yeah, for E, I think we probably still need E, because that gets the tie-in with the hosted business.
Okay.
Which we wouldn't necessarily care about necessarily mm-hmm. for like a flower arrangement, mm-hmm. flowers.
Why not? I mean, this seems like a sponsoring business would sponsor a food truck because they want to make money off the food truck. They would want to make money off a flower truck or flower cart or anything else that they allow their property to be used for.
Well, if they're allowing their property to be used, so if you had North Bend Bar and Grill allowing somebody to sell flowers on Mother's Day on their property, yeah. you would think that part of the arrangement to allow them to get on their private property would be some sort of payment for it.
But that would be between, I mean, why right, would right, the right, city right. need a sponsoring business for a food truck or any other temporary use?
Because I guess it does sort of get away from that food truck rodeo kind of feel or a pseudo farmer's market setting up on like Main Street where they come in and they're in the right of way and they just get right of way permits from the city. Isn't that more the intent?
But if I may,
yeah.
The last meeting we did, I think the part that we kind of brought that up was the situation of a brick and mortar parking a sponsored vehicle of theirs in front of a competitor. Or that's why we had that tie to the brick and mortar being adjacent. Would be, you know, one restaurant parking a money that they're going to make, something that they're making money off of in front of a competitor's brick and mortar.
Right, yeah. yeah. Point of order, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Greenberg's suggestion of mine didn't work.
I knew it.
We got to go to 9:30.
Or come.
Well, I'm going to suggest that I'm going to suggest that we table the last item on the agenda. But I don't know if the group feels we can finish off this section in the next 15 minutes. I
don't think we can. I don't have any comments, but we're talking about things that were already talked about the last meeting again. So I think there's a lot that we're going to have to go through probably to explain how we came up with these.
Is there anything that staff, does anyone have comments in particular?
I've only got two more to throw out, just so that would be easy for coming back.
Should I extend the meeting?
Yeah, I guess it must expire, so yes.
Yeah, I move that we extend the meeting to 9:30.
Second.
All those in favor of extending to 9:30, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Opposed. Commissioner Tao is opposed, right? Yeah, majority rules, so here we go.
So I remember asking this question because I had it written down on my previous one. At the bottom of page 4 under 182060D,
oh, yeah,
about fireworks stands, and my question remains, I don't know why these three items apply only to the fireworks stand.
Yeah, so I brought that up at our legal meeting, and the consensus was to keep it the way it is, because right now, the way that firework permits are reviewed, this is just an extra way to make sure that the conditions get into the permit and that they aren't violating it and that we're able to enforce it. So the question was to leave it.
Let me clarify that I'm not suggesting to strike it. I'm saying, if it's good for fire, why is it not applicable to all?
Right.
Why does it only apply to a fire? I somewhat get there on the idea of landscaped areas, if you're thinking that somebody's lighting fireworks at the fireworks stand, which I don't think is allowed. But I say, if only one sign is allowed for a fireworks stand, I think there's nothing unique about a fireworks stand. If we believe only one sign is allowed, it should apply. We believe that signage must be attached to the stand. That should apply.
I agree with you about the one sign. I would disagree about having attached to the stand. I know when I sell my products, say at a farmer's market, and I've got my pop-up tent, I have a small A-board,
right,
and I've tried, and I, especially when it's windy, and I can't attach it to the stand. I suppose I could buy another one. But sometime it's not visible if you attach it.
Well, it's actually my backway door saying, I don't know, again, yes.
Why we
What's
have
unique
that
about a fireworks stand having it to have that sign attached to it? If an A-board's acceptable for other businesses, it's acceptable for a fireworks stand.
Would you be comfortable with a sign on the use, let's say a food truck, as well as an A-board sign, A-frame sign?
Allow two signs? Or
one on a vehicle. So I'm envisioning what this setup is going to look like and how I'm going to write the code. And I could see there being the desire to have the one. The food truck clearly is signed. It's marketed. It has its name on it. And then they could have it.
That's a fireworks stand.
They could have their A-frame as well.
What about a menu for a food truck that's posted on the front?
Usually don't regulate that.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I'm making my less than pithy. You're applying an extra standard to a business just because they're a fireworks stand. I agree.
I agree with you.
I think it's more insidious than I think it's a cultural thing. Indian fireworks stands. Although the fireworks stands in this town is more of a
well, the fireworks stand here is promoted by a nonprofit service organization.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But I find nothing particularly unique about a fireworks stand that calls for specific regulations to it. It's not. Are those the right three things? But if they are the right three things, they apply.
Okay,
noted. I'd still challenge that back.
I mean, I'm just wondering, like, only one sign is allowed in, like, the radius of, you know, like, because you could put up a fireworks sign on, like, a utility pole or something for advertising, or no?
No.
Well, I mean, I guess that
actually, our sign code is pretty
strict.
You don't want off-site premise signs, so we've had some business owners that aren't right on the drag that would like to put out business signs kind of pointing, you know, hey, just around the corner, just come over here and wildflowers over here, and no off-site premise signs, so it would have to be right on this on the site.
Well, like signs for the SIP, SUDS, and SCI, or like exactly. So, like, I was just thinking about stuff like that where some of those are around. Like, I'm thinking about the outdoor community festivals. I don't know if the we've at least had the block party and stuff like that.
Yeah. So the Sipseth and Sign Jazz Walker permit, there's signage allowed under the special events permit for them. However, they are kind of stretching what is allowed, so they're right at the max of what's allowed.
So I'll challenge the commission again. I think I've done this every year that I've ever been on the commission. Where's our review of the signage code? Our signage code is terribly antiquated. Been asking for it to come before this commission for years, and this says it once again. So we've got a special application of signage code in a temporary uses section for one type of business. Sorry, I just see that. I'm gonna join Commissioner Ryan and just, that's wrong.
On the angry parade? Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it is pretty stringent, so, which I didn't necessarily realize, the signage. So, maybe it doesn't make sense to regulate fireworks specifically if you can't really put up signs in the other areas anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you want to see.
If you can't strongly articulate why this business rises to some level above any other, that's what I'm struggling with. And I've not heard any rationale for that. It wasn't necessarily coming out of a take these three items away. It's coming out of equal application. So.
This isn't true that fireworks stand really does, by its very nature, become almost like a circus tent because of all the excitement of what they're selling and all of that. It just becomes interesting.
I'm not even arguing that a fireworks stand is not something rather unique in its one time per year status, but. But how do these things contribute to that or dissuade from that? I'm lost in that. My second comment, totally off of that one, was at the top of page 7, it's really more of an editing issue. Jay, I think something got lost in the addition of the chapter.
Yeah.
Didn't read right to me. And booths associated, permitted through, I'm not sure what wording you wanted, but something's lost.
Something was lost.
You mean page 6?
Yeah. 6. Yeah, top. Sorry.
7.
Yeah, go to page 7.
It's page 7.
Well, it is almost 9 right now. Well past my shelf life.
It's either a racing associated or permitted. Okay.
So it looks like we will continue discussions of 18.22. Temporary use regulations and push the election of chair and vice chair for the next meeting.
Yep.
Question.
Yes.
When do the new commissioners get seated? Do you know? Is it May?
Some of your last meetings next
is the first May meeting your last meeting?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's. So the 23rd would be the next.
I think they might have, I don't have my agenda with me, but I want to say it was the 7th of May they were getting appointed.
Well, the reason I was asking, because, is this your last meeting?
No.
Nice.
No, the 9th.
Yeah.
The 9th is your last meeting. Okay. Because if we, I'm just saying we've already met twice on temporary use regulations, maybe even 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
So can you bring that back to us for our next meeting? So this group of this, my point is this group of commissioners can potentially finish that up. Otherwise, we'll have potentially new commissioners who won't have been following all this and we'll have to.
And if you
go
have edits, if you have edits and thoughts, email them. That would be helpful. Okay.
Well, the one suggestion or request that I would make is to take the separate food court section and just move it into the list of other allowable uses with those bullet requirements. So instead of it standing alone, it flows with all the other permitted uses and conditions that go along with that, like signs.
Okay.
I heard food court.
Food truck.
Food truck, okay.
Starting.
We, yeah, well, it, yeah, we, but we did briefly start to talk about it, so that might be something that comes up again. So I'll, okay. Is everyone else comfortable with that? Is there enough of a majority that I can do that and not?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It looks like you have an additional criteria for interim housing facilities.
If I may, Mr. Chair, just ask a question in regard to the election of new chair and vice chair. In the past, it's generally been done, I think it's fairly common practice, that it would be the new group of commissioners who would make that decision, not the outgoing commissioners. So it may not even be appropriate for the next meeting. That would
sure.
Now, that's been my practice and professionally in the past.
That's a good point.
I think this was anticipated because I think there was a concern that some commissioners might step down before the end of the term. So I don't know.
I think when I was, I guess, voted in or whatever, it was with the prior commission. So that was what my experience was.
I think maybe our code has a time where the elections happen.
That could be the thing.
Good luck. Or
something. I think unless maybe when I was off the commission, if one of the changes, because you guys did some procedural changes, typically May is the appointment, and it is, it sounds like, as I recall, last meeting for sitting commissioners is the first meeting of May. New commissioners come in the second meeting of May, and that's typically when we held
review the procedures as well.
The one benefit, in my experience, what we had done is if the current chair or vice chair was not continuing, then we would appoint an interim chair for like one or two meetings, and then the new commissioners would get a chance to know all the new people.
So otherwise they're going to vote for somebody.
Otherwise they come in their first meeting and the first order of business is lots of do a chair and vice chair if they don't know anybody.
Yeah.
So that's one option. The other option is to do it with the existing commission.
Yeah, that might just be easier. Might be right, Scott. When I stepped down as chair, I think we did do that election. I think that night, that's when Gary became chair. That may have been.
Yeah. I think it makes sense. I mean, depending how much experience they have, I mean, you know, some people came in with quite a bit of experience, but a lot of times they don't. Right. So they're not even in a position to be that in that position or really know what's going on or even, you know.
Well, I withdraw my suggestion.
We have to do it at the next meeting.
What do you
maybe
think?
Make that first on the agenda.
Yeah, bigger
exactly. That's a good idea.
Make it first and it would take effect at the following weekend. Or not. You can hand the gavel.
Yeah, I'm just going to walk out.
Hand the gavel.
What are you going to do, fire on?
Well, if it's immediate, then you can just leave. I mean, it's what to say.
Then we won't have a quorum.
Yeah.
Anything for the good of the order? We have 1 minute.
It's been a good experience.
I actually need some signatures from you guys before you leave.
You going to be at the next meeting?
I may not.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All right, all those in favor of adjourning tonight's meeting, say aye.
Aye.
No one's closed. Good. Thanks for sticking with it.
I was sorry to give this to you at the end, but there's a few packets of
minutes. Oh, my goodness.
Would you like to make a final comment?
Sign and send some blank.